Welcome to International Dispute Negotiation, your guide to resolving disputes everywhere.
This is Mike McElrath, and this podcast is about different ways of accepting and managing the risks of dispute resolution, presenting them through the eyes of experts from different countries and backgrounds.
May well think that he is the smartest man on the planet. That means quite unwilling to listen to you. He may actually get better along with someone who is not threatening to him rather than somebody where he thinks is intellectually threatening.
In the first two episodes of this three-part series with Thomas Waldeck, we discussed the dynamics of arbitral tribunals, what works and what doesn't when tribunals are constituted, and the qualities parties may seek out when appointing an arbitrator. In this third and final installment, Thomas and I engage in the conversation, that delicate dance when a party and its appointed arbitrator consider candidates who may be selected as chairperson of the arbitral tribunal. We tried to make this discussion as candid as possible, but what also emerged are different levels of candor. The conversation when it's had between two co-arbitrators, and the conversation when it's had between an arbitrator and a party, and especially between an arbitrator and a party whom one knows very well. You can hear this when, at one point during our discussion, Thomas tells me to switch off the microphone so that he can provide an even more candid assessment about the candidate we were discussing without mentioning names. Hey, Thomas, I'm going to show you now the names of some arbitrators, some well-known arbitrators. No, don't look. I'll go one by one. We're not going to mention the names of who we're looking at, but we're going to talk about what we would think about them if we were considering their appointment.
These things look different in different dynamics. If we are two co-arbitrators, it will look very different. We look at them, and we will not tell each other what we think about them.
I'm not an arbitrator. I'm a party.
You're a party, and I'm the co-arbitrator you appointed.
And we're looking at a possible...
And we're allowed to talk to each other. We're allowed to have an ex parte communication right. Until they're appointed. So let's take this as a scenario, because it will play very differently when you are my co-arbitrator. Right. Then we right. will... I can talk about this as well, but it's going to be very different,
very
and much
different
more
discussion.
Cautious
yeah, right.
discussion.
Okay, so we'll go through some of these names. And then the dispute, let's say, is one of moderate complexity. Let's say it's a fairly big dispute. We can put 50 million, for me, it would be 50 million, 100 million euros or dollars. So high stakes, relatively high stakes. And we're looking at some serious names here. Let's go through, and it's governing law. Let's not say it doesn't really matter what the governing law or the place of dispute resolution. We can say that it's a commercial dispute. Not an investment dispute, and we're considering different candidates for chair, all right? First name.
Do I have to look at the name? I can't
of course, yeah.
say it loudly.
No, you can't say the name.
Hmm. Right? Yes, I can see it. And
well, this is actually somebody that I've had in at least one arbitration. I was impressed with the level of seriousness. Although I've heard other people are concerned that he's very engaged and very busy.
Well, I'm here, I would say slightly, I have a problem. I've just worked with him in a particular context, so to say, actually as co-counsel. As you will see and can hear from my voice, I'm now very careful. I'm thinking, even if you don't mention name, what I can say.
But let's talk about characteristics.
Yeah.
As a chair, how do you think he would be for arbitration?
I actually think he would be, in principle, I think, a good chair. I've proposed him in cases where I'm often as co-counsel, I put together lists for my clients of possible chairs, you know, the ones I do, the chairs we would want but will not get, the chairs we are wanting but we may get, the chairs the other party will try to pull the wool over eyes. So I do this list, and he would be on my list. He's been on my list. To me, he's a serious person. He's as good as an arbitrator. He's also more flexible. I have to say here that I've worked with other people in his firm where I've had not such a positive experience. I think I don't think he's a control freak. I think he is certainly very knowledgeable. You know, you always see this with arbitrators. You look at their publications. Arbitration is a very publication-rich world, strangely. But it's because they have few other things to advertise themselves. He's written...
Well, at least until something better comes along, Ojemid and maybe even a database.
I'm
living for the day that there's a database about arbitrators.
Yeah. Now, in his case, I do know that he's written and he's worked, and I have used his recent work very much in my own work. I'm really close to being biased. I think he would be fair, knowledgeable, competent, and experienced. I've not really been with him as a chair. That would give you a very different level of expertise. So I've looked at his publications. I've got my own experience working with him, and he's pleasant.
What very, very continental in his approach, by
yes,
the way.
Yes, yes, he has a rather... even possibly a little bit of an anti-English. I've had discussion with him on that. You know, there is the English Bar has published in last year this leaflet where they're saying we are the best ones, all the continentals are bad. English law is better, continental law is bad. English lawyers are good, continental lawyers are bad, and English judges are better than the continental judges. They've done this very, very chauvinistic thing, and I've talked with him about it, and he got quite upset about it. He also, I think, is good on procedure. I think he's, like all major arbitrators, a proceduralist, essentially. So I think he will, you know, fairness of procedure is important to him. I've seen this, and also you can see it aside. He also has dealt with quite complex procedural issues. You can see this as well. What is the reservations I would have about him? The reservation is that I think he's very busy, even in the work I've done with him. What I found out, he is very, very busy. So, you know, it's not that easy to get his time and attention. And I assume he has got a fairly full calendar, which is good, you see.
I had heard that too, although I have to tell
you. Have you? Yeah.
I had no problem. We were trying to appoint a chair. Let's go on to the next one.
Yeah, yeah. Let me just see if there's something else. Switch off the microphone. He may listen to that song.
Okay. Next on the list.
I don't know him, so why don't you tell me and perhaps
he's a very prominent continental commercial arbitrator.
He's French.
Swiss, but you see him a lot in Southern European. I think he's terrible. One of the worst proceduralists, very busy. It takes forever to reach decisions. Perhaps you haven't heard of him simply because at one point he was very prominent, very well known, but it may be that he's just not getting work anymore.
Well, my knowledge comes from the investment arbitration principally, and I don't think he's ever done. Now, if you won't look for a Southern European, it means you're trying to avoid English law. Let's assume you're not trying to have a very literal construction of the contract for which the English barristers, QCs, are famous for. I mean, I would know of some people for example, in Spain. I'm in Spain who are competent, and you suddenly see coming up as both co-arbitrators and chair people.
Let's move on to the next one. Let's see.
Well, I'm here also slightly at a conflict when I think, if we look at it, very, very technically competent.
This is an American arbitrator.
No, I feel very, very technically competent. A details person, I should say, is always, he would always, you know, look, put the dots and the I's right. Now, I have not worked with him as arbitrator. I have a good relation. I respect him greatly. However, I've heard from an arbitration where he was involved, both his stories and the other party's story. And it's an interesting story, and if I tell it, you know, he may be identified.
So let's not tell it.
Yeah.
Let's go on to the next one, very quickly, number four.
Yes, I know of him, but I can't really tell you.
Actually, this is somebody who came up as a chair in a recent arbitration for us, and I think we passed on him. Known to be very, it's an American with a large American firm. We would probably, in most instances, I think, probably pass on large firms just because of the conflict situation.
Well,
but I heard that he, two things, positive and negative. Again, all based on hearsay. One, that very, very efficient, but I also heard very formal and even very expensive were the comments. And
how much?
His hourly rate would have been, I forget, but it was expected to be among the highest of the high.
We can talk about it. I'm just curious. what are the rates you're encountering?
I don't remember, but I think it was something on the order of like $800 an hour.
I have heard of higher rates.
Okay.
So but don't forget we do have the currency. The dollar is still undervalued.
Right. The dollar right now
But
that was very high for the.
But that seems to be the high rate. I mean, I know of arbitrations with senior arbitrators, and I know things like €500-600, which would get about the same. But you realize that if you hire somebody at partner level in a major law firm, particularly in London. Or even if you take a QC in London, that as far as I can see, the rates can go substantially above £500-600.
Next one on the list, do you know if you ever worked with her?
Well, I know the name, and I know her personally. I have not worked with her, but she seems to me, I've met her and... I know her background, and she, generally I have not worked with her, but she seems a reasonable, pleasant person. That is really was my impression. That's all I can say at the moment.
I had her once as a party-appointed arbitrator and thought... No, actually, she was the chair of a case that ultimately settled and seemed to run things efficiently. Next person. Have you ever worked with him? English arbitrator...
Yeah, I haven't, but with the English arbitrator,
this is an English arbitrator who's said to have continental experience.
Goes
both ways.
It's not frequent.
This particular English arbitrator is someone that we did have a little bit of experience with, and as a chair, and I found him English, but open to non-English approaches. To how the proceedings should be conducted. Next one, another probably as prominent as the first one on the list.
Yeah, naturally I know him well, and so I have to be more guarded in what I say.
But if you and I were talking about this person, let's say, and he was being proposed as a chair in a proceeding, what would you tell me about how he might act as a chair?
Would I tell him he's certainly someone with great experience? However, I would also... say, easily he may suddenly go off in a tangent, in a theoretical tangent of his own. And I'm not sure as a co-arbitrator you would get that much of a listening. I think he may well think that he is the smartest man on the planet. That means quite unwilling to listen to you. Now, that may work well if he thinks the other party is even smarter. Also, I think there is an issue which often you have to pay attention in arbitral appointments of competitiveness, you see. So he may actually get better along with someone who is not threatening to him rather than somebody where he thinks is intellectually threatening. So that's really what you think.
Well, I know of him through... is acting as counsel, not as an arbitrator, and I found that maybe a little bit abstracted, not as involved in the cases as maybe some of the other lawyers in his firm, but extremely astute, very internationalist, and I would say almost synonymous with the concept of lex mercatoria, that if there are idiosyncrasies of local law or the governing law, that he would be a good person if you really wanted sort of general principles and concepts to be accepted, and there was some oddity of the governing law of the contract that just didn't strike you as being fair, I think he'd be a good chair in those cases. Okay. Next one. Here's an American who spends a lot of time in London in particular. Have you come across?
I've heard the name, but I've not met him.
Okay. Very even-handed, well-known. I guess if you had if you were an American company and involved in a European arbitration, you wanted somebody. Although I think his experience tends to be much more with the common law and perhaps a bit less continental. But he's an internationalist. Next one. She's in London. We can say that.
I would look at at the career and her background. I have no conclusive statement because I have not worked with her. But what I know is you have to understand her career. How far she got and how far she didn't get. The other thing I think you have to also see what do people think about her. I mean, I do know that in the firm she works, she wasn't that kind of popular, including with her superiors. So before envisaging her seriously, I think one would have to find out much more. You see, I would, as I said, particularly in people who don't have a clearly established reputation, I would want to go back. I would want to talk to the firm she's worked. And I would also want to see with whom she has been working before. So, as I said, I know her quite reasonably well. I think, but this would be a case for me of considerable due diligence, very different from.
Right? But that's the problem with anybody who is relatively young. I mean, this is someone who is, I think, spent a lot of time developing, her interest in her career. Has worked a lot in the oil and gas and the energy areas. I've never worked with her.
Are you sure about these things?
Yeah, I am sure about that. Yeah, I can tell you offline how I know that. But the but still is I think is in a relatively young period of her career. I'd be open to a potential appointment of her. Based on the discussions and some of her public speaking, seems sensible, level headed. But again, that's one of the problems with arbitration is you don't know until you get there. Let's go quickly to the next one.
Well,
big reputation in Asia, so they'd be very.
I can say a lot here, but it is so close to my work.
Well, we're considering this him for let's say as chair in an arbitration. I know very little about him as an arbitrator. I know about him because of his promotion as mediation, and which to me speaks very favorably about him. The fact that he's promoting mediation in his region.
Well, here I would, as I say, I am now very careful. You have to look at the cases he's done. Some, I tend to know certain types of arbitral awards better, and. And then you have to ask for direct experience. The reason I'm here so cautious is that I actually have here a very strong involvement. I've even been, so to say, clearing him for a chair appointment. He's works between America and a little bit of Asia. But my experience is, as I said, I've been seeing him in action, and it has been rather positive, I should say here.
It has been positive.
Yes, yes, procedurally wise, positive.
I hear
procedurally
that
wise, positive.
Yeah, but I hear he's very busy. I hear it's very difficult to schedule anything with him, hearings, mediations.
That's the case.
I don't know if that's true. We considered him as a mediator one time, and I was told that you'll never get him. It'll take you 6 months before you get a free date.
Yeah. Perhaps the case I'm dealing is. He has time. But what I've seen is actually positive rather, you see, procedurally, fairness, professionalism. And I can't even complain about the speed, but it may just be that this case, you see, is
sufficiently large, and so you're getting a priority. Well, go on. It's good news instead of bad news. Let's look at a couple of others.
I have known of him, and I think I've been working against him in the case, but I've not met him personally, so there isn't really much I can say. Perhaps you have something to say.
I know him as counsel, not as an arbitrator, and wouldn't know. He seems even-handed in his approach to things, combative.
Combative, that's what I know, yes. Yeah. As a counsel, combative, so...
Yeah. Maybe better as a party-appointed arbitrator than as a chair. Next one, American.
Yes, I know that person, but again, rather as counsel. And
I know her reputation as counsel. I have no idea how she is as
and
an
I'm
arbitrator.
Not. See, I'm not. So to say, I think yes, I actually know since I do. Due diligence on people also I work against with this counsel, very systematic, very organized, very someone who prepares everything in detail. But then these people often have the problem that when something unexpected comes, they don't really know what to do. You know, they're then at a loss. In fact, when you, it's also part of the advocacy discussion we had, when you deal with these people who are extremely hardworking and very diligent and prepare themselves very well, they typically have a difficulty, or they often not typically have a difficulty then to dealing with the unexpected, and that happens.
So you don't think she'd be good at dealing with the unexpected? No. Okay. So let's pass on her as a chair. Last name, here's a continental arbitrator.
Well, I know something.
Comes up a lot in ICC appointments.
I've heard things, and I may have heard things from you. So I don't even know where. Certainly a very good lawyer. I think a very good technical, a very good lawyer, and detailed, careful. And then his background and experience in industry, in the particular industry, is an extensive one. There is a theory, and I may have heard it from you, that he bends too much with the wind. I'm not sure that was you telling me.
I've actually heard the opposite. I've heard that he likes to be counter to, that he's the sort of arbitrator who delights in deciding against the party that appointed him. And I've heard of two instances, at least, in which he's done that, in which he went and decided against to show his independence in a way that the parties, that at least it was reported to me, found very irritating.
Well, you know, that is a difficult thing when you are a party-appointed arbitrator. You are, you know.
Well, one of the instances was actually where he went against the chair. He went against his party-appointed arbitrator and went against the chair.
Yes, I know the case. So, but
cases. I heard there was more than once.
Yeah. Well, would it on the other hand means, you see, it means it perhaps that's one of the arbitrators who says, I consciously forget, or I try to forget, or I suppress who appointed me. That means somebody like this will have quite, what you have to see, he will have quite some persuasive force with the chairman. Because if you know this, if you've got that reputation, he'll be, when he comes down with an argument, that will be with any chairman very persuasive. You see, the question is, you as a party you appoint him, you'll kind of what you're worried about is that you give up all the kind of the little bit of loyalty and sympathy for your case, which makes you appoint somebody. So you are here trading in your trade, you're giving up sympathy and you get more persuasive power.
Would you appoint him as chair?
The one problem I would be worried, and in this case I probably was worried, probably what you told me, is that suddenly once appointed he would forget his previous case and suddenly take another tack. That's always possible. You can always say, you know, that case can be distinguished in one way or the other one.
Great. Well, thank you very much. This was a lot of fun.
You've been listening to International Dispute Negotiation. This podcast is presented by the International Institute for Conflict Prevention and Resolution, CPR. CPR is a membership-based nonprofit organization that promotes excellence and innovation in public and private dispute resolution, providing an international resource for the avoidance, management, and resolution of business disputes. For further information about CPR, or to download archived versions of this podcast, go to www.cpradr.org. Questions about this podcast or the issues discussed can be addressed to idn@cpradr.org. The music of Note Noir is used with permission.